And so I want to invite two guests up here as we talk about a global focus, like I said. So Ali and Johan, if you want to come up here, that'd be great. Have a seat. Not sure why these seats are different levels, but you can choose which one based on your height. Hey, you can adjust that one there, Johan. That'd be great. Yeah. Okay. It's about level there. It's great. And Ali, come on up here. So we've got two people from two different demographics, as you can tell, 20-something and a...
30-something.
30-something, that's right. Yeah. And I'm the old guy in the middle. Yeah, okay. And Ali is a Grace Pointer, and Johan comes from Europe. And with this world focus, the global focus that we want to talk about this morning... I thought they would share with us. So why don't I give you the microphone? And Ali, I'll talk to you first. And so why don't you tell us, how long have you been part of Grace Point?
I just started attending Grace Point last year.
Last year?
A little over a year ago.
A little over a year. Okay, yeah. Awesome. Good. That's great. And you're involved in our youth ministry, right?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm a youth leader for grade 8 and 9.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Thank you for that ministry. That's great. Yeah. Now, you're a student. Is that what you're going to college at the moment?
Yes, I'm going to the University of the Fraser Valley for business in human resources.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about, as our theme today is God's people on mission, sharing God's story around the world. And where did you go to? Why don't we stick the slide up on the screen there, please, Gail? I think we've got...
Where I went this summer is a little bit funny. If you look at the screen, I don't know if you can see it, but along the right side of it, that's asparagus. So I went on a student program this summer with an organization called Global Shore, and it was a four-month program. The first 2 months were a work term on an asparagus farm, which is really unique. I might be the only one in here who's ever worked at an asparagus farm. Oh, yeah, we're gonna. Yeah, so that was the first half of it. The first 2 months were working on an asparagus farm. And I was working in a packaging plant, so we just packaged the asparagus. And you can't really see me, but if you look kind of the line of people on the left, I'm like at the very, very back of a red toque. And so we just had to basically, all I did for 10 to 14 hours a day, 6 days a week for 2 months was weigh asparagus. Just put it on a scale and then made sure it was the right weight and put it back on the conveyor belt. So that was the first part. And if you go to the next slide, the second part, I went to Guatemala for 2 months on mission. And so most of what we did, we were working with a Christian school and also with churches associated with the school. So the photo that you see on the screen is us doing kids camps. With different churches. And so this church was a church way, way out. It took about like an hour ride in the back of a pickup truck to like total rural Guatemala. And in Guatemala, they speak Spanish, but in this area, they don't even speak Spanish. They speak the indigenous languages, and it's totally rural. There's no stores. You have to drive an hour to get anything like food, water. And so there's like some really cool churches that are there that are spreading the gospel to people that have really no access to any other people. So, that's that photo. And that's me in the middle doing a skit. And then this is my team. There were 12 of us that lived together and worked together and went to Guatemala together. And this is us. Standing in Guatemala, it's overlooking Antigua, which is the old capital of Guatemala. Yeah.
Okay, maybe two final questions for you, Ali. I'm just curious, why did you go, and what did you learn? So maybe start, why did you do this? Like the idea of working an asparagus farm 10, 14 hours a day, that doesn't, and then be way out in the middle of nowhere there. Why did you go?
Bit of a complicated question. I love mission. I've been on different trips to different countries and really just I think that God calls us to mission everywhere. And so even just kind of in my daily life, like, I want to live on mission and for God's work. But this trip was, I think just the past couple of years, I was just feeling like I've been in school for 4 years and I'm still not graduated. I'm in my fifth year now, and just things have been, just felt pretty stagnant. Like, I was part of a ministry before, and I stopped, an evangelism ministry, and I stopped doing that. And so it was just kind of a couple of years of like, what am I doing? So I just wanted to do something different, and to, I don't know, get out of my comfort zone and see what God would do with it. So so I heard about the program. I applied. I applied the day before the deadline, wrote my whole application. It took a couple hours. So it was just really spontaneous and ended up there. And I think what I learned while I was there, because Guatemala is, if anyone's ever been to Guatemala or Central America, South America, it's very, very different. The church is very different. It's very charismatic. They're jumping around. They're loud. They're screaming. They're dancing. I think what I learned from that is, and not just from the church, but from being in Guatemala and the way the church runs, and when you see what God is doing, it's really just like really dramatic things that are really normal in Guatemala, like dramatic healings and all sorts of things that we don't necessarily see here unless you're looking really hard. And I think what I learned was that God's working in the world in really dramatic ways, and in kind of our really comfortable Western culture, we don't, we kind of don't allow God to work as much. Like, he can still work through us for sure. But what I learned is that I need to let go of certain things. I need to let go of the comforts I have, because God really wants to work, and he really wants to work through each one of us, and really can. Like, he's not hindered by us. So I think that's one of the biggest things that I learned.
Okay, thank you, Allie, for sharing. Yeah. Sharing your heart. Thanks for being obedient to the call when God called you to go, and that you went. So, appreciate that. So you can have a seat. I'll take that microphone from you. So thanks very much for sharing. Yeah. Give her a hand. Now, Joanne is not from Grace Point. In fact, this is your first time here, right?
First time
yes.
Here.
Now, you have met some Grace Pointers, though, before, haven't you? So you've been, I know, in Pastor Phil's house and have met a few.
That is this year, but the first time I met Grace Pointers when they came to Ukraine 8 years ago. And if I managed to say thank you for supporting John and Evelyn Weens as they responded to the call of God, that would already be the main purpose for me being here today and say thank you. If you care... Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you care for other missionaries the way you cared for John and Evelyn, you're one of the most impressive churches there is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Yes. And so, yes, Johan is carrying on the story of what John and Evelyn have started there in Ukraine. And Evelyn, I wanted Evelyn to be here this morning, but unfortunately she's got a family reunion anyhow, and her family insisted that she stay at the family reunion and not come here this morning. So otherwise I wanted her here. Johan, so go ahead.
Having family is forgivable.
Yeah, okay.
So, that's good. Yeah.
Now that's pretty good for, because you're German, right? Germans, usually German and comedian don't usually go together. So it's,
yeah. This is what studying in California does to a German.
So Johan, where do you live?
I live in northern Germany near the city of Hanover. Bielefeld, anyone? Some.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you do there? What's your role?
We have been a missionary family for 20 years. And the last few years, I'm with MB Mission, giving leadership to our programs in Europe and in Western Asia, including Turkey.
Okay. And you say your family. So who makes up your family?
Okay. I don't have a picture here right now. We have three children and a foster daughter, and they are right, as we speak, spread out. Our youngest daughter is on a mission assignment with Trek in Thailand. Our second youngest daughter is on a study abroad semester in Ireland with my wife present in Ireland. Our son is in Germany, and our foster daughter works in a Christian orphanage in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Family is definitely spread all over. So, well, we're grateful that you came this morning to come in and share. And so I know you have some slides, and so if you want to stand up to share, you can go ahead and do that. And then when you're done, why don't you come and join me at the table again here.
Okay. I'll stand in such a way that I can see the slides. And this is a season that where we can be fearful in Europe. And Paris is, of course, an illustration. As we look to Paris for the national teams competing in soccer, there were explosions right next to the stadium, and the world has changed. And it's easy to walk in the spirit of fear these days in Europe. Even when you see the number that is on the screen, 1 million refugees this year alone coming to Germany. Your government is now accepting 25,000 Syrians. We have about 350,000 Syrians this year alone. And there are many voices saying, what are we doing to our land? But this whole thing is on a scale that no one could foresee, steer or prevent. And so then the only source that this can be attributed to is God, who brings people on the, puts people on the road. And to me, if I don't walk in the spirit of fear, of Islamization, of whatnot, then the alternative is the spirit of love and compassion that Jesus gives. And then I see not an avalanche. Thank you. Then I don't see an avalanche of people coming. I see a million of people having dignity, history. And a year ago, this million people were beyond the reach of every one of us. And truth is, today, this million people is within the reach of every one of us. Now, no one clapped. But they are within your reach. Some are coming to your area. But they're also within your reach in Europe. You can partner with us in reaching out to them. And there are many languages, not just Arabic. We have people from Kosovo. We have the Persians. We have people from Ghana. In this picture, we are having lunch here with four refugees. Three are from Ghana. One is from Guinea. And the people from Ghana can be addressed in English. So you are already set up for this kind of ministry. And we have had, just a week ago, we had a refugee summit where we asked churches and people who work with refugee communities to come together, share resources, and pray together. And as we did, as we were done, we then had a service with Randy Friesen, my director here out of Abbotsford. And after we were done with the service, we went past the refugee camp and invited people God led us to for lunch, and met with these four people and shared a meal with them. And they have been on the road. Give me a guess. How long have they been on the road? Months? 2.5 years to 3 years. And you know, that there's a station, like they stayed in trip. This guy, one guy that I'm hugging here, he is Omar, 8 months in Tripoli, Libya. Worked for a company as a textile designer. Saw the owner of the company and his family beheaded in his presence because of the civil war in Libya. And the other guy to our left, his name is Suleiman. And he's from Ghana. He went through Nigeria. He has seen a bus where Boko Haram was taking out the Muslims and burned the bus, with everyone left who was not Muslim in the bus. And they are ready for a new life. And in a way, it should make us proud that we are living in the countries that are dream destinations for people who have little hope in their lives. And we can give them so much more than just food. But when we were done, we asked them also, who helped you along the way? Give us one story. And you'd love to hear the stories. Right to my right is Nicholas. He's the only Christian in this group. He said, my story is not told and I can't tell it. but I will write a book for the world to know. I said, yes, the world longs for truth. Give us the truth that you have seen. So next, I'll take you quickly to Ukraine. This is the country you have prayed for and supported. And this country has seen warfare and many challenges. It's the largest country in Europe, that is completely in Europe, some 40 million people. And the war has hit the east, where you see the darker part, and then something like almost orange. That area is occupied and is beyond access. But we have, as SMB Mission, we have church planting going on in the Zaporizhia area. I would almost have to walk up to this, but to the Sea of Azov, right? Can you see Zaporizhia? And this is where we go back and forth. And in that area, right on the Azov Sea, November 1st, we started the ninth church. This year. And I would say that of all ministries John and Evelyn have been part of, not one ministry had to be compromised or cut. When John passed away a year ago in January, our mission made a commitment to continue all budgets to the end of the budget year in May, thinking that after that we will have to revise everything. But truth is, everything grew since. But not because they were gone, but because they laid a wonderful foundation. And because you prayed, and because you visited, and because many more people did, and they established good partnerships. So the Crimea down in the south is annexed by Russia, and the other part are occupied. Next picture. In June, I had the privilege to be part of this meeting. The inviting side was the Conservative Party, the Christian Democratic Party of our parliament in Berlin. They invited the religious leaders of Ukraine. All churches are represented, and there was also a mullah and a rabbi. And then the German host was saying, "We, as German politicians, we would love to be to mediate in the tensions within Ukraine." And I'll keep it very short. Then these leaders got up and shared their part, and they were saying, "There's no civil war in Ukraine. We witnessed together that there's no religious tension. We're probably the most religious country in Europe. There are no ethnic countries. We represent all ethnicities of Ukraine. And there's no language problem because half of us speak Russian at home. But we deal with an aggression from abroad. And if German politics wants to mediate, then you have to do international mediation." And next. But what this war and the poverty that comes with war, the destruction that comes with war, also the darkness that comes with war, highlights the church. Any true crisis will highlight the true church. People of God shine when others are desperate. People of God, there's a Russian song, it goes this way, that the darker the night, the brighter the stars. And so, by no means is a wartime a time in which we have to shut down and get into some mode of expectation or waiting for things to change. When things go bad, this is a welcome situation to move in a different spirit. Next. Here we have our annual leadership camp, and people are coming from eight churches here and two in the Crimea that we now have no access to because there's a border between, and we together share the vision of where will this go next and what does God put on the hearts of the church. I will say that in Ukraine, we as a mission from abroad have no agendas that are not local church agendas, have no ministry that is not an expression of the local church. And we do not do relief that doesn't lead to church planting. But next. And the local church is growing. It grows leaders. John and Evelyn left behind four elders, and we were to decide who is now going to be the pastor. And we could not decide. We added a fifth person and blessed five people to be the pastoral team with different gifts, different callings, and we foresee that maybe there will be two churches soon, but maybe more led by these brothers. Next. Dedication of a new building in Molochansk. It's actually the largest church, and we are in areas where there in the past have been Mennonite Brethren churches until Second World War. So our denomination, my mission, all of that work started here in the 19th century when missionaries from these lands were sent to India, to China, to Indonesia, to Japan, and many other places. So we are, in terms of the people here, we are a different group of people, but we step right into the spiritual inheritance and into the same spirit of taking the gospel forward. Next. But these are the challenges. The economy is down 12% this year compared to last year, which was already a war year. When will there be enough taxes to fix these roads, you know, to build the schools, to heat the cities, to light the schools, even in this winter? We deal with failed states that give us all the refugees. Ukraine is fighting in a situation where it could fail. Next. But then in Ukraine we have leaders, and I see many countries in Europe. This is not the only country I go to, but nowhere do we have these kind of people resources. Every person you touch is a gift. It has capacity. So one is the television operator. The next one, she is a volunteer, goes to the front lines. And to the lady to the right, she runs a center for children with... Oh, now I forgot the disability in English. Autistic children. And when you saw the big group of people, these are leaders. So getting behind them and seeing their vision is a big joy. Next. Probably you have heard about this the most. The New Hope Center, the work with orphans. And I see Mel Wiens here, the brother of John, and they do more with the work in the farm and trade school. And we do more of the work now in the cities with different trades, helping aged out children when they have to leave the orphanage. They're around 16, 17 years old, but mentally they might be 13 to 14. And so they are easy prey in society. We walk with them, trying to bring them into a situation where they can make a living and have skills to make that happen, but also to meet Jesus and be transformed for a new life that is not predetermined by the histories of their failing parents. Next. So, I'll draw to a close. We're in our 15 minutes over. But we come to this one church in December a year ago, and we discovered that there were no good news. The pastor saw us coming, and he wanted to give us a report. The church is growing, you know, some things that a mission wants to know, to report. And he said, the church is not growing. The young people we had left for the cities, they study elsewhere. And we don't have money to heat the sanctuary. So we meet for prayer every morning in the other room. And we're a small group. And he didn't comment on health. And this is the vehicle that he received years ago. And the valves were bent. And he was disassembling the car in freezing temperature, barehanded. When we came, he did not even... He was, you know, all in oil. And when we left, someone said, man, he's burned out. I mean, he's depressed. And the pastor. And then I was embarrassed. I didn't ask better questions. But as we drove away from this situation where schools are closed for 2 months because the government has no funds to heat them, I thought, this is, God calls us to move in a different way, in a different spirit, right against that. So we said the church needs to be warm. Not like the Revelation 1 text, but warm, heated, lit. open, full of programs, full of joy, full of life. Next. And many churches responded, and this is what happened. Schools closed down, churches opened up, sanctuaries were heated. We put foosball in, ping pong, programs, and we did winter camps for the first time in many years, or at all, and for 2 months. And we're wanting to do this year again. Next. And yeah, men tend to be inaccessible in these Orthodox Catholic places. Religion seems to be more for the women, but war gives access to men. You can pray with them. They'll receive the gospel. They have joy in talking with you. They don't say, I am of a different religion. You say, can I pray for you? They'll say yes. Next. And we were handing out all our things in random packages and boxes, but then we printed our own bags, and it says, you are not forsaken. God said, I will not forsake you or abandon you. Is this probably how the English text goes? And you know, with the response, I'm just saying, this is how the growth went. This year, we spent around $150,000 on relief, going into the war zone, feeding the people who were not able to leave the war zone. Elderly, single mothers to the most part. And one family at a time, one place at a time, partnering with different churches. And this is an ongoing ministry. I foresee that if the war will be, as it is now, slowed down, the front line not moving, maybe next year we will start rebuild some of the houses. Next. Yeah, the elderly. Next. Kids with no smiles. Next. And church planting, pray with us that this would be winter wheat, I tell my folks. Winter wheat is, it looks stupid if you're not a farmer. Like the winter is coming and people sow in the lands. Like, is this the time of church planting when there's war and destruction? But the spring will show. There will be a harvest. Next. And God led us to have 4 day camps in the war zone where kids could not be shuttled out. Yeah, some churches in this area have partnered, and we did shuttle people within the war zone. And Andreevka was in the news for many, many days. And the final picture next. Yeah, this is a place on the Azov Sea. Next. Yeah, some buildings will never be rebuilt, but continue to pray for Ukraine, for the lives. And the final picture has some children in it from our camp, literature, that there would be Christmas, something like this, that there would be hope, that we can build foundations that are not corrupted by the enemy, and where kids' lives will be rebuilt after this war is over, after hatred is done with, after people look forward, that there would be a community that they can be part of. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Johan. Why don't you have a seat there?
Yeah.
Just a couple of questions coming to mind. First of all, thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing about John and Evelyn and their work and how the ministry is continuing on. And isn't that a great legacy to leave behind? You know, it's when I told Evelyn last week, I said, oh, Johan's going to be coming. And she just said, Rick, I'm flabbergasted. You know, it's just, and you even shared with me you were at this conference and that you were worshiping and you just thought, oh, it'd be great to have John beside me.
Yeah.
And then I think we talked, well, he is, but just in another realm, yeah. Right? In heaven, you know? And so thank you for sharing that. Now, as I look at some of these images, Johan, it's easy for despair to set in. You know, it's easy to become cynical and to think, why bother? It's the needs are overwhelming. You talked about the lack of heat and the refugees, what they've been through. How, in your spirit, do you maintain optimism? Do you maintain hope?
Yeah. I was with one of our missionaries in Cairo, and my hope tank in Cairo goes down like 25% a day.
Okay.
So I guess you have to have some sort of call and anointing to not lose hope in some of these places. But also, when you are around the believers, they don't flee. You know, we met, and there were tank tracks everywhere. And we met, and people were saying, we now have hanged evacuation plans in our church. And we contacted churches in Western Ukraine who would receive us as refugees should the war also encompass Zaporizhia. So they have plans on the one side, realistic plans, that if the war comes here, this is what we will do because we shepherd people. But then on the other side, we have a philosophical debate. You'll appreciate that. We as a mission help them to rent their space. And now some people say it's unhealthy for a church to be in a space that is rented by someone else. We are tithing, so we should pay for that. Someone else says, no, if MB Mission and the churches in Canada are paying for the room and we tithe, we can put one more program into this church. Do something with for mothers of preschool children that they can come here before their kids are in school. There's so much life and so much capacity in the body, so many programs that they would be willing to start. Each time I'm in Ukraine, I come back energized. And more hopeful for our churches in the West that are so poor sometimes that they only have money.
Okay. Let that sink in, eh? So you're encouraged by the believers in the Ukraine and some of these places that you you go to, even though there's very difficult situations and there's a reason for despair, but you're hopeful when you see the church?
One thing that happens when there's a war situation, people are tested for patriotism or nationalism. And we come out of the Anabaptist Mennonite history line, where we are taught and believe that you can love your enemies. How do you love enemies when they invade your country? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this would be something that is a luxury debate in our Bible schools, the nonviolent position. Non-defense. And here, this is a challenge because people are taken out of the church and recruited, enlisted in the army. Like the worship guy in our Zaporizhia church, he served as an artillery corrector for now a year. Can you imagine what kind of questions that brings to the church? And then you have to address it. Now we know who the enemies are. Do we love them? And how do we love enemies? And we said, if it's true that you can reach Ukrainian soldiers with the gospel, but maybe a month from now we will have Russian soldiers here. If we see soldiers able to receive the gospel and don't try it on Russian soldiers, we will be still Ukrainians, but we will be betraying our Lord. So these are kind of challenges where people grow with the challenge to go beyond and step out. And we say also we will support people of any background or conviction. Mm-hmm. I think this is where I grew as well. Some of the theological questions that are kind of around our heads here are secondary once it's tested by real life.
Okay, right. On a practical level, Johan, maybe a couple of questions. First of all, you showed about the refugees and a million refugees in Germany. And so I applaud your country. You mentioned about Canada with us taking 25,000. And so we as a church will be adopting a refugee family. We're moving forward with that. And also the government is bringing many refugees into our area, including the city of Surrey here. And I've heard numbers of 300, 800, you know, those kind of things. How do we practically, tangibly reach across culture, language, religion, etc.?
I really like the word tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you be creative around that. People who you will see come will be ripped out of their communities, and they cannot picture themselves outside of those communities. Like the Yazidis, they are not Muslim, they are not Christian. They are a certain faith group. They only intermarry. They can't marry outside their community. And now they will be, maybe this will be a Yazidi family here. And the Muslims also have a ummah, a community of worldwide to which they belong. And if we are inviting them into this ummah, to this community, it has to be more than a service on Sunday. So be creative in plugging the kids into something and being a community and more than just a program-driven church. Yeah. That is the big challenge that I see. Many people in Muslim countries who see visions of Jesus, receive Jesus, believe in salvation, eventually go back to Islam because they don't find a way of expressing their faith and live it, having completely different expectations to how it has a social expression, how communities are built. So our challenge in our individualist Western society is, how can we even be a community to people who are community living, who are driven, and who come from collective cultures, not from individualistic countries?
Mm.
But I'm a migrant kid as well. My mother grew up in a Kazakh, Turkish language, Muslim family as an orphan, and it can happen. It can succeed, and we have hosted others, as I shared with you, a war victim from Chechnya who became our daughter. Things can happen, but it's a challenge more than just witnessing. It's a challenge to be a community. And the better you are a community without the refugees, the better it will be for the refugees as they experience this community.
Yes. Yeah. No, thank you. Good word there, to be that biblical community that the New Testament calls us to. Yeah. So as followers of Jesus, it's sometimes easy to become very local in our focus. How could you encourage us as Grace Pointers, final question, to be globally minded believers?
I mentioned my youngest daughter is right now in Thailand. If you could, as the church community, say, we will delegate one young person a year to the TREK program, which is a discipleship program that reaches out to other countries. Not just leave it to someone, go on a random web page to a random group, to a random destination, and then you find out where it's all happening, and then it's over when this person is back. That is a normal experience of the church, that the church doesn't see the fruit of its involvement. But if you would decide, we will give the scholarship for one kid a year, and then we get behind this country, this kid, this family, this country, this will be an ambassador elsewhere, and then see how God could bring this church into a covenant relationship with that church. So church and church relationship that is more than mission. And these would be tangible ways. You would know where the person has gone, and where money goes, the heart goes, the Bible says, and then you will grow in your understanding by having ambassadors from this church to other communities and outreach. That would be just one way. But sending a team to rebuild Ukraine, or sending a team to serve the refugees, right next to one of our churches in Bielefeld area, there is a tent city of 1,500 people. Warm tents, but 1,500 people in a tent city. If a team of five would come, and spend 2 or 3 weeks, that would also change some of the dynamics when they come back.
Okay. I think each of us needs to ask ourselves, what does it mean for us to have that global focus? What does it mean for us to be someone who obeys the Great Commission? That Jesus said, go into all the world. And whether it's across the street or across the world, whether it's to the Ukraine or whether to Guatemala, like Ali went. And to answer that, and to say to the Lord, this is what I am willing to do. And not just to put it off or to say to someone else, but to be in that constant mindset to say, I will go, God, until you say no. What would it look like if we all thought that? I'm going to go until you say no. I'm just willing to go. And like Johan just gave us some tangible handles. And again, what would it look like for you? And maybe you're closer to Ali's age and you're in high school or in college. What about if you gave up a segment of time to say, I'm going to go into all the world. You know, I'm going to go for 4 months like she did, you know, or I'm going to go for a year, you know. And she mentioned about the schooling thing. I say, who cares about the schooling thing? And I know some of your parents are thinking, oh, just hold on, you know, we got the college thing kind of thing. It having just lived in Calgary, where there are many, many Mormons. And if this were a Mormon steakhouse, S-T-A-K-E, not the other steak, steakhouse, there would be a commissioning of Mormon young people who go out for how long? 2 years. And who are some of the wealthiest people in Calgary? It's Mormons. Right, and their demographic tends to be that way across the country. Evidently, the going out and serving for 2 years doesn't seem to inhibit them from succeeding career-wise. And so I say, if you're a young person, maybe just pray into it and see if God will call you, like Ali, to go for extended time. Or maybe you're of the demographic of Johan. You can't do that. You can't go for 2 years. You're whatever, got some business interests, whatever, that you need to stay here. But what about if there's 52 weeks in the year? What about if one or two of those weeks you said, I'm going to go. I'm going to go across the world for 1 week, a year. What would that look like for you to say, okay, 51 weeks, I'm going to live here in the Lower Mainland, but 1 week, a year, I'm going to go. Again, everybody, each of us need to ask ourselves, what is God calling us to do? But we know the Great Commission, and in the Acts version, it says that we are to be His witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And friends, if we all got behind this mission, what would it look like for Grace Point to be a church that extended the gospel to the ends of the earth? Doing what Jesus called us to do. And so as the hospitality comes up to collect our morning offering this morning, and as the offering bag comes by, you can consider, God, what are you calling me to do? How can I be part of a global movement that you are doing? How can I be God's person on mission sharing God's story? Again, it's going to look different for each of us, but for each of us to be open to that. And as you give here Sunday after Sunday, that we can continue to do further good work that God is doing. So let me pray. Oh, gracious God, I thank you that your church is at work around the world. Thank you that men and women are taking up the call. And even in the midst of war-torn places, even in the midst of some despair, some incredible trials, that they are being your salt and light. As Johanna reminded us this morning, that the light can shine the brightest when it's the darkest. And we want to be that sort of light. We don't want to hide our light. We want to let it shine here in the Lower Mainland and across the world. And so I pray your blessing and favor upon Johan, upon his ministry there. We just pray that the things that he's dreaming about and hoping for, and even as he said, additional churches in Ukraine and building on the legacy of John and Evelyn and New Hope and the ministries there, what has happened. And thank you how you have sustained that and even multiplied that. We'd ask for your favor. We'd ask for your provision. We'd ask that your word would continue to go out with power and with anointing. And so do that, Lord, I pray. Bless my brother in his travels and in as he meets and as he plans, as he does your work. Be with his family, his kids spread across this globe. And may each of us be followers of you and obey what you have called us to do in our own way. Thank you that you use us. You use our treasure, you use our talents, you use our time. For your glory we pray. Amen.